You know, I believe we can, in chapter 7, in these 28 verses in chapter 7, I believe that we can divide this chapter into three parts. In about the first 10 verses, the author of Hebrews is really writing about the greatness of Melchizedek. And in my notes I've got, I described the section of verses from about verse 11 down through about 19 as the importance or the significance of Christ's priesthood. And starting with about verse 20, through the end of the chapter, through verse 28, I would describe that section as discussing the superiority of Christ's priesthood. We've seen the writer of Hebrews back in the fifth chapter and in verses 9 and 10 describe Jesus as a priest after the order of Melchizedek. And now we see the writer in chapter 7 turning to establishing the greatness of Melchizedek and showing the significance of Melchizedek's priesthood. And then, as I said, the greatness of Christ's priesthood in the last part of the seventh chapter. When we left off last week, we were discussing in verse 4, if I can get my notes at the right level for my reading glasses, it seems to be hard to do anymore. We were discussing Melchizedek receiving tithes from Abraham. And in the story in Genesis chapter 14, we see Abraham paid a tenth of the spoils to Melchizedek. And we read that under the law of Moses, the various tribes of Israel tithed, didn't they? They paid a tenth to whom? Randy? To the Levites. Okay. So Abraham paid a tithe or a tenth to Melchizedek, just as later on under the law of Moses, the tribes of Israel would pay a tenth to the sons of Levi or the tribe of Levi. And Um, also if we would take a look at verse 5, and indeed those who are in the who are of the sons of Levi who receive the priesthood have a commandment to receive tithes from the people according to the law, that is, from their brethren, though they have come from the loins of Abraham, but he whose genealogy is not derived from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. Okay, so what's the significance? What is the writer saying about the significance of Melchizedek relative to one paying tithes and then Melchizedek blesses Abraham? What's the significance of that? Okay, who is the lesser here? Abraham is the lesser. Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek. Joey?
And in this situation here in Hebrews 7, it's making the point that Melchizedek is a type of Jesus. Using the term type or analogy, Melchizedek is like Jesus. He makes the point by pointing out that they're both king and high priest. He makes the point that they're both without beginning, without end. He's showing that Melchizedek is like Christ, and therefore Christ is greater than Abraham. And he's, again, he knows that the Jews revere Abraham. He's making the point that Christ is superior. And keep in mind, he's writing to the Hebrews, and you know, they thought very much of Abraham, and he's basically making the point that somebody here is greater even than Abraham, and that is Christ.
Okay, now, Joey makes a point here about Melchizedek. Sometimes in these discussions about Melchizedek, you hear people try to identify who Melchizedek is. Some have tried to say that that Melchizedek was Shem. Yes, that's true, Joy. Oh, yes. others have tried to say that Melchizedek is, and there's a, if I can put it this way, there's an academic term for it, to phrase it that way, and a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. They call that a theophany. Okay? That's speculation, to say the least. But I think we miss the point that the writer is making here when people try to identify who Melchizedek is. David?
Maybe you said something about some say he could be Enoch.
Oh, yes.
But this is without beginning. You know, we know where Enoch is.
Yes. Enoch had genealogy. But let's come full circle back, though, to emphasize the point that Joey made. Because I believe that that is, in fact, the point that the writer here is trying to make. And that is, we need to understand Melchizedek as a type of Christ, or type of the priesthood. Specifically, Melchizedek, the priesthood of Melchizedek is a type of the priesthood of Christ. This becomes important in the arguments that the writer is going to lay out through the rest of the seventh chapter. That's how we need to think about Melchizedek, Gary.
Yeah, because this whole book, the writer, the Holy Spirit through the writer is trying to deal with the problem. These people wanting to go back to the old law. They held it in such reverence. They considered Moses, being the source of that law, as very highly honored. Abraham, the father of the covenants, the promises, all those things. And so he takes these things that they know, these logical arguments, we start with what the people know. So he takes those things that they know and say, look at, they even submitted themselves. This Melchizedek even superseded them through the example of Abraham, that Abraham considered him greater, he paid tithes to him. So Christ, being in that parallel, is so much greater. So again, keep going back to the point of the book, trying to keep them away from that old law and looking toward the better things.
Yeah. David and then David.
Yeah, the whole book is, like Gary said, is to show Christ's covenant greater than the old covenant. Even when he was in the first chapter, when talking about better than angels, he would be also very reverence to the angels being the messengers of the old covenant. So even there, it's still, the whole point is this new covenant, the New Testament, the new law of Christ is better than the law of Moses.
Mm-hmm. David?
Yeah, just kind of go a little bit further with what Gary said here. In a sense, Levi paid tithes to Abraham. So Levi is still in the home. So that definitely puts Melchizedek before him.
Okay, and I, you know, to go back to the point that Gary, or to reference the point Gary was making, if we look at the first statement in verse 4, now consider how great this man was, that even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoils. You know, I tried to take a look and see whose name or whose names were considered or to be or called great in the Bible. And actually, you know, I think I only came up with about four people. So there were not many. For instance, in Genesis 12 and 2, God told Abraham he would make his name great. In 2 Samuel chapter 7 verse 9, I think God said of David, I will make thee a great name. But I did only come up with about four people in the Bible who whose name the scriptures refer to as being great. So there weren't very many. And so we have one of these four people being blessed by and paying tithes to Melchizedek and his priesthood. Maybe if you were to take a look at it and do more research, maybe you might come up with a couple of more people in the Bible, but I did only come up with about four. So, I think we need to think about Melchizedek in terms of Melchizedek and his priesthood being a type of Christ, being a type of the priesthood of Christ. Because then clearly, if the priesthood of Christ is a type, or the anti-type of Melchizedek's priesthood, then Christ's priesthood is also greater than Abraham and the Mosaical law. That's really kind of the argument that the writer here is going through, all the way through the end of the chapter, as a matter of fact. Yes.
We kind of see the skill intact, if you will, of the teacher, in other words, the author of the book of Hebrews here, that he's leveraging what his audience already knows to his advantage to teach them something. He knows mm-hmm. that they're very familiar with all these old law characters and all these old law characteristics. And he's using all that to his advantage to drive home the point, to get them to ask themselves the question, why would we want to go back to something that's unfair? I think that's just noteworthy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what, that is the question.
The skill of the
yeah, it begs the question, why would you want to go back to something, to a system
that
which
that
is inferior?
Right.
And he embeds more reasons regarding that statement. He embeds more reasons why the old system is inferior relative to the priesthood of Christ.
Even when we get into the chapters coming up, we get up into 9 and 10 where he's talking about the sacrifices, how they fell short of what Christ's sacrifice accomplished and all that. I mean, throughout that whole thing, he's basically showing his superiority so that the audience will say, yeah, he's got a point there. Why should we want to go back to something that's inferior?
Okay, so now, the priesthood of Melchizedek . The significance of the priesthood of Melchizedek is that Melchizedek blessed Abraham. Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek. And now what else in verse 8? Take a look at verse 8. Here, mortal men receive tithes, but there he receives them of whom it is witnessed that he lives. Okay, so what so what is this teaching about the priesthood of Melchizedek? It's still going on. Yes, now, you know, the Bible doesn't say, it says, you know, that Melchizedek is a priest continually, I believe. It doesn't say how, does it? It does not, we don't know how, we're not told how. But well, I think the point to be gleaned about this, or from this, is that being a type of the priesthood of Christ, that Melchizedek's priesthood was not affected by death. Christ's priesthood was not affected by death, was it?
Something that's continued on and is with us to this day. It's some system of religious faith. And we're not
Well, we don't know.
I take it from that that Melchizedek lives on, if you will, his priesthood lives on metaphorically through Christ.
Could live on metaphorically, yes.
Because they're a type of each other. But that's just my guess.
You know, in the Mosaical system that was going to be instituted later on, you would have priests who had received tithes, and they were mortal men. And the high priest was also going to be limited in his service until his death. But apparently the priesthood of Melchizedek and certainly the priesthood of Christ is not limited by death. Yeah. But, how Melchizedek still lives and how he's a priest continually, the Bible doesn't say. So, we don't have an answer to that. Roy?
But it's God in this case and in that case. So I think it's saying over here we've got this, over there we've got that. I think it's just distinguishing.
Yeah. They're talking about the priesthood of Melchizedek. And they're talking about the Levitical priesthood.
But there he received them.
One person received them, in other words, Melchizedek was the one person who received the tithe rather than the whole Levitical tribe.
Roy, what version are you reading? Okay, so it reads here, mortal men receive tithes. Okay, so who are those mortal men? The Levitical priesthood. Okay.
Those who are the sons of Levi who receive the priesthood have a commandment to receive tithes from the people. So it's part of that Mosaical law that he's trying to emphasize as inferior, where Melchizedek had no physical right by that lineage to be a priest. They were not under that kind of command to give him tithes. So I think
right.
You take Carolyn's comment, you say that it's in this case we have those who were commanded to give tithes to these mortal men under physical right that they had to get them. Melchizedek, being different, received tithes from a different nature. So I think it's in this case, comparing the physical tribe of Levi receiving them versus Melchizedek receiving them.
Kind of summarizing verses 5 and 6.
That's as good a way of describing it as any. Verse 8 is summarizing verses 5 and 6.
Because of what he does, not because he was born.
Well, actually, what the writer is arguing is that because Abraham paid a tithe to Melchizedek, that the sons of Levi, the Levitical priesthood, through Abraham, was paying a tithe to Melchizedek. Right. Because of who Abraham was. Okay?
Because
of who Melchizedek was. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think to put it in perspective of time, Judy, I think Levi would have been a great grandson of Abraham. Okay? So in verse 8, really,
To summarize what you just said is the point that he's making is that the Levites are the offspring of Abraham. So the Levites, like Abraham, both, if you will, were... Abraham literally was subservient to Melchizedek, and indirectly, if you will, through offspring, the Levites therefore are also...
Subservient to Melchizedek. That's the point that I'm making.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, as a matter of fact, if we take a look at verses 9 and 10, even Levi, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, so to speak. Okay? For he was still in the loins of his father, meaning Abraham, when Melchizedek met him, Abraham. Okay? So, the significance of the priesthood of Melchizedek is that it's a type of the priesthood of Christ. Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek. Melchizedek blessed Abraham. All this is showing that Melchizedek was better than Abraham. And that the priesthood of Melchizedek is unaffected by death. David?
Chapter 11, verse 4, have any connection with that?
By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it he, being dead, still speaks. That's what I thought you might be getting at. I think you might have to connect the dots for me on that one. God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead, still speaks.
He's still alive.
Oh.
No, in
that sense, yes. Mm-hmm. That he had a better sacrifice. And lastly, the writer is arguing that the priesthood of Christ is better than the Levitical priesthood because the sons of Levi paid tithes to so to speak, to quote Scripture, to Melchizedek through Abraham. So,
Melchizedek was a priest chosen by God. As soon as the last Levite dies, you can never have another priest.
That's right. Randy?
It's not just when the last Levite dies, it's the destruction of Jerusalem. Not Jerusalem Levite anymore.
That's true. But nobody knows, because all of the genealogies were destroyed when the Roman army destroyed Jerusalem. Finally destroying Jerusalem in approximately September of 70 AD. All the genealogies were destroyed. No one can prove their lineage today. No one would know who is from the tribe of Levi at all. And you know, actually, actually, David, you just gave me a lead into the next section of the study, and that is, you know, about verses 11 through verse 19 or verse 20, dealing with the significance of Christ's priesthood. You know, this section of verses here also becomes not a bad section of verses at all, to talk to someone about why the Mosaical law is not in effect today. These verses have something to say about that subject. Because there's been a change in the priesthood, and because there's been a change in the priesthood, there's been a change in the law. Now, in verse 11, therefore, if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood. Now, what does the writer mean there by perfection? If perfection, what are we talking about? That man is perfect? Or? Does anyone have the ability to look up the original Greek word there? I think it means complete or completion, doesn't it, Chris? That's part of the discussion contained in these verses. Right.
Sins could not be completely removed under that law.
See, the author here is saying, for if perfection, or for if completeness,
could be attained
through the Levitical priesthood. And notice this parenthetical statement, for under it the people received the law. The priesthood, the Levitical priesthood and the law stood together. So he's saying here, therefore, if perfection were, this means that the old law received under the Levitical priesthood, it didn't bring perfection, did it? He's saying it did not bring that which is complete. Randy?
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ is who completed the law. He fulfilled the law. He brought it to its fruition. He changed the law. He changed the priesthood in terms of law. That is death and resurrection.
Okay. Gary?
Verse 12 for me has always really been the hinge of that. The priesthood being changed of necessity, there's also a change in law. He's making the argument that there's no way that Jesus could be a high priest and the old law still be in effect. They're not. It cannot happen. So, then he cites twice in the next 10 verses the prophecies about Jesus, the Messiah, being a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. So it's established that he is a high priest, but he can't be a high priest and live in existence with the old law because they're not congruent. So therefore, why is there must be a new law? Right. Why is there a new law?
Because the old law was inferior, it didn't provide for perfection or completeness.
And Jesus couldn't have served because he was from Judah, not Levi. That's another point.
Because nothing was said about priests from Judah,
right.
From the tribe of Judah.
Right. So you couldn't accept both.
You couldn't accept both.
The law and Jesus as high priest.
David.
Well, first Randy. Red points out Jesus understood the Jews had a problem. They thought he was coming to do away with the law. What Jesus said is, I'm not doing away with it. I'm fulfilling it. I'm completing it. I'm doing what the old law said need to be done. The old law never was a permanent law. It was always set up as a temporary law for a smaller group of people.
Yeah, actually, I think that thought is contained in the first part of verse 11, where it says, therefore, if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, because of the word if there. Bruce? Yeah. Yeah, otherwise, why another priesthood? That's the question.
And you can see, Christ would have been glad for it to be done in the Garden of Gethsemane scene. He knows what he's got to do. It's ahead. And he said, any other way, let this cup pass from me. So he would have been glad for the priesthood there.
But it wouldn't do it. It wouldn't do it because, Randy, could you read the first four verses of the 10th chapter of Hebrews?
Hebrews 10, 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
Sacrifices which they offer continually year by year make perfect those who draw near. Otherwise, they would not have ceased to be offered, because the worshipers, having once been cleansed, would no longer have had consciousness of sins. But in those sacrifices, there was a reminder of sins year by year. It was impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins.
Okay. Now, you know, Randy, you brought up the other half of this that I hadn't considered, but the half that I was thinking of is contained in 3 points. In the 10th chapter of Hebrews here, that the old law, number one, that animal sacrifices could not make you perfect. Animal sacrifices could not cleanse your conscience. And, in fact, animal sacrifices cannot take away sin. Now, when we think about those three things, that's also why perfection did not come through the old law, isn't it?
That word comes from the...
Complete...
Telos.
Yes.
And it means to bring to an end, to bring to completion.
Completion.
To maturity.
Completion to maturity. Mm-hmm. Joey?
Listen, no way suggests, I've heard people suggest this before, I find it quite offensive. I find it quite offensive when people do suggest this. But some people suggest, well, God, then why did God even have this old law? If it had all these faults, well, the truth of the matter is the faults was with the people because they didn't keep it. But anyway, it is not the case that God came up with the law and found out after the fact that it just wasn't cutting it, so we had to scrap plan A and go to plan B. That's not at all what's going on here. But some people actually take that point of view.
No.
What's happening here is, and the scripture makes it clear, the old law was a schoolmaster to bring us under Christ.
Right.
It wasn't God messing up and then coming up with a better plan. It was God basically creating a stepping stone, if you will, to bring us to Christ.
That's looking at just simply, that's pulling out one part of the plan of God and not considering the entirety of his plan.
Right.
Well,
Genesis 3:15. It's mentioned all the way back there. The patriarch system.
And
all that comes in the play.
And that's also what Randy was saying in Matthew 5 about coming to fulfill the old law.
But there was prophecies and stuff he fulfilled that was way before the old law, too. That's what the Jews didn't seem to give us. Their law came in play a long time after some of the great lessons of the scriptures. There's a lot of things that happened before the Jewish law was ever given.
That's
they
true.
They were under law before then.
They were under law before then, Randy. No, I haven't.
But it clarifies what we're getting at, and that is that Jesus is, compared to the character of Melchizedek, it was pointed out last week that there's no mention of a priest prior to Melchizedek. It's the first one mentioned in the Bible. But it says that he was a priest.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Kingdom mentioned in chapter 10 of Genesis, which is talking about the kingdom of Nimrod, which was Babel.
Yeah.
But then the War of the Kings in chapter 14 is really where we find the kings for the first time. And Melchizedek is pointed out as being king of Salem, a priest of the Most High God. So his priesthood predates the Levitical priesthood by generations, by many generations.
Yes.
So the parallel to Christ is that what made Melchizedek priest? God. God appointed a priest. We don't have any record of it. We don't have a record of his father, mother, his children. We have a record. That's what it means when it tells about genealogy is not traced verse 6. We don't have a genealogy.
Right.
But he was was appointed by God to be a priest in the same way that Christ was. Christ was appointed by God to be a priest. It had nothing to do with his background. That's what verse 14 says. And that our Lord was descended from Judah, tribe of Moses spoke nothing concerning priests. And that's why I said verse 15 and 16, it really clears it up. This is clearer still, another priest, the priest arises according to the likeness of Melchizedek, who has become such not on the basis of the law, physical requirement, but according to the power of an indestructible life.
Mm-hmm, so.
He's a priest forever because he's indestructible.
Okay, so you see, the writer is going to start out here in showing and arguing why the old law has been done away with or has been annulled. And he starts by saying that the Levitical priesthood was not perfect. Okay?
Intentionally.
So, well,